Now, the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol held its second televised public hearing this morning, which we aired live here on the Ideas Network. The commission provided testimony from Trump campaign officials and attorneys, along with former Attorney General Bill Barr, who said the former president was told he lost the 2020 election and that his claims of voter fraud were unfounded. The lawmakers on the committee said they intend to use this evidence to help show the connection between Trump and the storming of the Capitol. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch or listen to this morning's public hearing? What stood out to you? What questions do you have about what they presented, why they did it? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. David Cannon is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He's currently editor of the Election Law Journal and is affiliated with the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you, Rob.
What stood out most to you at today's hearings?
Well, a couple of things. One is the committee seems to be laying the groundwork here for a criminal indictment, because one of the key things you have to do with a criminal indictment is to prove intent. And so all of the testimony we heard today from the Republican campaign officials, from Ben Ginsburg, one of the leading election law attorneys that litigates on behalf of Republicans, they all said that Trump knew after the election, his campaign people, the attorney general, were telling him, you lost the election. Yet he persisted in the big lie of trying to claim the election was stolen. And so if you have all of these people who are close to the president, meeting with the president after the election, you know, telling him this is not true, this there is no factual basis for the claims that are being made that the election is being stolen, that lays the groundwork then for saying, well, Trump knew that this wasn't the case, yet he still told his supporters to, you know, to try to stop the counting of the electoral vote. So I think that's the main takeaway from today. Then there was a tantalizing thing at the very end where they threw out for the first time what could be another potential something that could bring a criminal indictment, which is misuse of campaign funds. So this, you know, $250 million that was raised, you know, after the election for the Election Defense Fund, and you had Trump campaign officials saying the Election Defense Fund really wasn't a thing and that the money was just funneled to the Save America PAC, and a very small portion of that $250 million was actually spent on legal fees. And some of this was reported at the time, but this really is something that the committee has not focused on so far, and they kind of just threw it out there at the end and really didn't develop it. So maybe that's something they're planning to come back to in the future.
Well, let's take each of those in turn. Let's start with former Attorney General Bill Barr. The latest testimony that they shared was in a lot of ways the center point of today's hearings. Here's a portion of the video the committee played this morning.
I was somewhat demoralized because I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality. On the other hand, you know, when I went into this and would, you know, tell him how crazy some of these allegations were, there was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
How significant is it that this is coming from President Trump's choice of attorney general to replace what he was dissatisfied with, who had been seen, I think, as a strong Trump loyalist up to this point?
Well, right. And that was, I think, a really significant point about today, is that everybody who testified today were Republicans. So one thing you often hear from Trump and his supporters, this is a partisan witch hunt. Well, these were all Republicans talking, including, as you say, the former attorney general, who was a very strong Trump supporter throughout his presidency. If you think back to the Mueller report, you know, Democrats were, you know, just chastising Barr at the time for really kind of not quite, you know, throwing it under the rug, but definitely downplaying the significance of that Mueller report in a way that affected, I think, how the public interpreted that. So, you know, you could say that Barr helped save his presidency, you know, during that first impeachment investigation and impeachment. Yet Barr, by the end, had clearly decided that Trump had lost touch with reality. He kept on persisting with the claim the election was stolen, and Barr then resigns, of course, in mid-December because he was just, you know, fed up with how this was going.
You mentioned that this is being set up in a way as a prosecutorial laying out of facts here. Now, this committee can't prosecute. So who is the audience for something like that? Who would look at these false election claims and potentially run with that?
Well, Merrick Garland clearly is the main focus here for the committee, that he's the one in the Department of Justice that would have to eventually, you know, bring an indictment if that were to happen. And Garland, as you know, has been kind of frustrating, I think, to some Democrats, especially on the committee, is a very cautious person, and he would not proceed with any kind of legal action against the former president unless he was quite sure that he had a case that could be won. And so that's what the committee, I think, is trying to do right now, is to lay out that groundwork for him and say, look, we think we have the evidence to go ahead with an indictment. You know, here, go do it.
And we don't often see indictments from the Justice Department of former presidents. Like Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford had pardoned him before it could get to that point after the Watergate resignation. There's a pretty high, no pun on Bill Barr's name, there's a pretty high bar here, right?
Right, no, for sure. And I think it seems unlikely to me, given what we know about Merrick Garland, that he will go ahead just because it is so unprecedented, and that I think, you know, that especially with the difficulty of establishing intent, you know, that you have to prove to a jury that the President Trump really thought that he, knew that he had lost the election, yet persisted with all these claims, and that's tough to do. And even Bill Barr, in his testimony that wasn't played in your clip, but later on in the testimony, he says, yeah, it's possible he still believed this. And, you know, to Barr, this was crazy. And in fact, the campaign manager for Donald Trump, you know, talked about how, you know, they had sort of divided people up into Team Normal and Team Crazy. That's what, you know, Trump's campaign advisor said, you know, I was glad to be included in Team Normal, not Team Crazy. And so people on the inside saw these claims as clearly wrong. But to be able to prove that Trump really knew that what he was saying was false, that's hard to do.
Talking to David Cannon, political scientist at UW-Madison, looking at the second day of public hearings in the House January 6th Commission. You can join in with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, outside of the legal side of things, the false claims about election fraud in 2020 are a big issue in the midterm elections in 2022. Some of the people who generated those claims are running for, you know, governor of Pennsylvania, for example, where they might have influence over what happens with election outcomes there. A lot of people at the January 6th protests are now running for office in Wisconsin and elsewhere. What does it mean politically to have these Trump insiders, his campaign manager, lawyers, his attorney general, saying we knew from the start that these claims were false? We were telling the president that they were false, even as he kept claiming them after we told him they were false.
Well, one would hope this would start to bring more pressure on the people who can continue to deny the truth about the election, and to then maybe give some more leeway to Republicans who, you know, would like to be able to distance themselves from Trump and to move on, you know, from the election deniers and to, you know, focus on the issues that the voters care about for the midterm elections. And so with all of this testimony today, that might be able to create more space for some Republicans who do want to break with President Trump. But that's going to be, you know, tough for some of them to do, clearly.
And then flipping that around, some Republicans are saying, hey, Democrats, you're wasting your time with this stuff. Year and a half ago, this is old news. Voters don't care about this anymore. Do you think that it's worth in the House, especially if no indictments come out of this, do you think it's worth reviewing this in the way that the House is doing?
Oh, I think it's absolutely essential to keep on trying to convince the public of what happened on January 6th really was an attempted coup, and that this was something that remains a threat to democracy as long as people don't recognize what happened. Because if you don't hold the people accountable who perpetrated the big lie, you open the door for this happening again in the future. And especially, I think a really critical thing that needs to happen, you know, before the midterms is to revise the Electoral Count Act, which is something there is a bipartisan group of senators right now, they're trying to work on a compromise to fix that law that opened the door for all of the potential mischief on the night of the counting of the electoral votes, because the law is poorly worded and ambiguous, and it needs to be clarified that, for example, the vice president only duty is to open the ballots and count the votes the way that Vice President Pence decided that that was his role. But there were people like, you know, Eastman, the attorney that worked with the president to try to have the alternative interpretation of how the electoral count could would proceed, was, you know, based on this other reading of that law, which I think, again, needs to be fixed. So that is another thing on the agenda here. The purpose of these hearings is to try to make everyone recognize this wasn't just a one-off. This is a potential threat to our democracy in the future.
We're recapping day two of the January 6th public hearings with UW-Madison political science professor David Cannon. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Were you surprised by the testimony from Trump campaign officials and lawyers and cabinet members in one case? Do you think this testimony should end other efforts to overturn the 2020 election? Does it change how you view election integrity in the United States? Call in with your thoughts or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison political science professor David Cannon. With us today looking at the latest testimony from the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol and the events leading up to it. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your reactions to what you've been seeing and hearing. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go to your calls now. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hi, Rob. Love your show.
Thanks.
You know that. So I just wanted to, this really could be considered a question, but I'm wondering if anyone thinks the January 6th committee will present as evidence the pattern of behavior of Donald Trump actually way back, I think it was in 14 when he was doing the Republican primary, when he said, if I lose this, I'll show you how the system's rigged.
Paul,
and that was kind of, I think it's interesting, that sort of timeline there.
Paul, thanks for the call. David, Paul referring to then-candidate Donald Trump in 2016 saying if he lost, it was going to be because of fraud. When he lost the Iowa caucus to Ted Cruz, he claimed there was fraud there too. Is that relevant, do you think, as a pattern of claims?
Well, I think, yeah, Paul's onto something here. And this is something that the committee has talked about and looked into. And I imagine this will be part of their overall case, is that this is something that has been, you know, a consistent message from Trump in 2016, not only when he lost Iowa, but remember after he beat Hillary Clinton, he was claiming there was fraud, you know, because he was upset that he lost a popular vote. So he was claiming there were all these, you know, dead people voting and illegal, you know, non-citizens voting and everything, even in 2016 when he won. And he certainly laid the groundwork in 2020, starting very early on. In March, April of 2020, he was saying the only way I can lose in the fall, when he was behind in the polls, of course, you know, would be if the election was stolen. And that was repeated, you know, dozens of times then over the course of the election. So this is something that was part of the mindset of Trump for sure, is that he's trying to make everyone believe it's stolen, you know, to then be able to make the claim, like on election night when he claims victory, even when we had testimony today from his campaign manager and other campaign people, you know, telling him not to do that because the votes were still being counted. And it was, you know, predicted in many of these states that would eventually go for Joe Biden, that Biden was going to carry those states. But Trump went ahead and declared victory anyway on election night.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Joe joins us now, calling from on the road. Joe, hi.
Hello, how are you gentlemen doing? Thank you for this program. I just want to mention something about, you know, it's very difficult to prove seditious conspiracy in court. But Liz Cheney, a while back, not at these hearings, but at the recent hearings, but she said something like, it is a felony by action or inaction to impede the workings of Congress. And for 3 hours, Trump sat there and did nothing. That, to me, would seem to be very easy to prove in court, and that should be Mr. Garland's focus. Because you don't have to prove intent. All you got to prove is that he was sitting on his fat derriere and did nothing for 3 hours. That's a felony. Convict him of that.
Joe. Thanks for the call. David, I think the hours that Joe is referring to there are likely to be the subject of some of the future hearings.
That's right. We didn't have testimony on that today, but Joe's absolutely right. That's going to be a crucial part of the testimony coming up. Right now, they're in that phase of, again, laying the groundwork for, you know, what was Trump's state of mind, you know, right after the election. You know, did he know what he was saying was false? And today we heard testimony from his campaign manager, from Bill Barr, all these other people who were telling him, you know, on election night and for the next, you know, month and a half that, yes, you lost this election. But the idea about what did Trump do after the assault on the Capitol had started, and where he didn't forcefully try to stop that from progressing, that could be itself another criminal act. And we will hear more about that in the subsequent hearings.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Talking to David Cannon about the public hearings today, day two of the public part of the hearings of the January 6th committee in the U.S. House. Back to your calls now. Saul is with us in Stevens Point. Saul, hi.
Hey. One of my favorite authors had a character who talked about someone who had unassailable ignorance, and I think that's what we're looking at. If anything, we're talking about the insanity defense. He's presented over and over with a variety of facts which say the evidence that you're getting is false, and yet he ignores it. Now, is that to me, that's willful ignorance, but not necessarily culpable. I mean, he is psychologically unable to accept the fact, accept these facts as true.
Yeah, that's a really interesting. I had exactly that same thought process today that this all just, you know, went through. That, you know, either way you take this, Trump is not qualified to be president of the United States, because either, as Bill Barr put it, he's detached from reality, and that's we you played the clip earlier where Bill Barr, you know, says that he was really disturbed by the fact that they were telling Trump this over and over again, and he just couldn't accept it. So either it was criminal intent because he knew what he was saying was false and he was just being strategic about it, then obviously then that he's not qualified to be president because he, you know, should be in jail. Second would be if he really did believe it, but then he's detached from reality and should not be president because he can't come to grips with the facts in front of him.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Bill now in Superior. Bill, hello.
Hi, quick question. We have in this hearing about the riots at the Capitol. When are we going to have a hearing, do you think, on the riots and the looting that Antifa and BLM were in front of that was endorsed and supported by many Congress people and senators on the left when all that happened? When are we going to have that hearing?
Bill, thanks for the call. David, this is, I think people often try to make an equivalence between the two. What do you think?
Well, I mean, everyone, when this comes up, I mean, everyone always, you know, points out that the violence that happened at some of the rallies in support of George Floyd and trying to, you know, bring some focus on the criminal justice system in this country, you know, will, you know, always say that the violence that happened in those cases is obviously something that's deplorable and should not have happened. And we have had a lot of discussion about the various incidents, you know, in cities around the country. But, you know, this is something quite different. It's a very different category than a threat to our democracy, that the foundation of our country always has been the peaceful transition of power from one political party to the other political party when they lose an election. If we lose that basis for democracy, we no longer will be a country. And so the stakes are so much higher for this, and this is why I think this is so important to, you know, keep our focus on this. And you know, Bill is right to, you know, raise concerns about, you know, other incidents that happened in the past, and those have been discussed and are receiving attention both at the local level, state level, and nationally as well. But it really is a very separate issue that's not sort of directly relevant for the discussion today.
Bill, thanks for the call. David, I want to bring back a phrase you used earlier in the discussion, attempted coup. And some people probably nodded along when they heard that. Some might be like, wait, what? Can we? Do you think it's fair to describe what happened leading up to and including January 6th as an attempted coup?
Well, that I was using that phrase because that was Benny Thompson, the chair of the committee's phrase. That's how he described it on Thursday, the opening night of the hearings. He described it in that language of the attempted coup, and that's what the committee is trying to now prove, that this was something that was a concerted effort to stop that peaceful transition of power from one party to the other.
As just our last minute, what are you watching for in the remaining hearings?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that will get more attention. One is, you know, what happened after the start of the assault on the Capitol, and what were the actions, you know, of the president? What was his mindset at the time? We did have a couple of brief mentions of that in the opening night of the hearings, where there was a conversation that Trump has said he didn't have, where he said that maybe the supporters are right when it comes to Mike Pence. You know, maybe that they should hang Mike Pence. And he didn't use exactly the phrase "hang Mike Pence," but it was clear that he was being supportive of the protest of the people who were in the Capitol at the time, and when Mike Pence was, you know, really in danger. So I think there'll be more discussion of that, of what were his actions, what was his mindset, you know, on January 6th itself. Whereas right now it's been, again, more the sort of lead up to that.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, good to be with you.
That's David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's currently editor of the Election Law Journal, and he's affiliated with the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. He joined us today to check in on the latest testimony presented by the House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. We'll be airing the rest of those when they resume later this week here on the Ideas Network and online at WPR.org.